Hey, would you stand with me right now? And I want to begin with a passage of scripture, and we're going to read it right up front, then I'm going to talk about a few things, and we'll read it again, and then I'll say a few more things, and basically we'll be done by about 3 o'clock. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I want to read to you from Acts chapter 2, beautiful passage of scripture, and I want to start at verse 44. Acts chapter 2, verse 44, it goes like this. It says, all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. If you skip down, go to verse 46, it says, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And I love this line, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. It's really good to be back with you. Last weekend, as many of you know, my appendix, in fact, it was late Friday night, my appendix decided to give me a little trouble. So I went over to the ER, and they did a fun CAT scan, and the doctor walked in and said, you are about to get lighter. And I knew what that meant, and so they ended up doing this emergency appendectomy, but everything went fine, and I was back home in a few hours, and it went good. So good to be back with you. Thank you for your prayers, your notes, and all that stuff, emails, and also I got to acknowledge Ben and Larry, those guys. I mean, if you could just imagine getting a text message at about 12:30 in the morning on a Saturday, with me saying, "Hey, guess what, guys? I'm not going to be there." So good luck, and and I got to tell you, like you got some good people here leading, and those guys. I mean, immediate response was no worries, we have it taken care of. Don't die. So I want to say thank you to them as well. So this weekend we're starting a new series that we're calling Next. Would you say that with me? Next, real simple. It's a series that, just as the title implies, it's really a series about. Well, about what is next? What is next for us as a church community? But also, what's next for those of us, in many regards, those of us who call this our church home? What's next for me? What's next for you? And we're going to see what all this means for each one of us individually. And so over these next 3 weeks, what I'm going to do is we're going to be sharing some pretty exciting things that we feel like God wants to do in our community in this next season. We're not going to be talking about, here's what it's going to look like 5 or 10 years down the road. This is right now. We're going to talk about what we believe and what we sense God wanting to do immediately in the weeks and in the months to come in this next season. And so I'm real excited. I want to say that if you're new here, if you're visiting with us, I've seen so many new faces this weekend. If you are new here, I want to say this is a great, great weekend for you to come. Great series if you come back the next couple weeks. Because you're really going to get an inside look at our heart and what we're about. And I think that you're going to get a really clear picture of where it is that we're going in the days and in the weeks ahead. Now, here's the thing. One of the things that I've come to understand a little more as I've gotten older is that, a big part of looking forward, looking ahead, involves taking some time to also pause and look back at the past. I think it's really important to not just look forward, because I think the past informs us a great deal about what God has done, what God is doing, and what God is going to continue to do. And I think for us, looking back, not just for the sake of looking back and acknowledging it, but to actually come to a place where we can celebrate our past. And where we can get sort of a 30,000-foot view of, and see how God has moved in what oftentimes proves to be some very unique and unexpected ways. And my guess is if you look back over your life, you'd say the same thing, like, man, ways that God has moved that you would have never imagined. Sometimes crazy and unique ways, and sometimes ways that you didn't even realize it was God until, sometime later. And so anyway, what I want to do today is I want to take you on sort of a journey that I think will not only give us some perspective on what God has done here in our tribe, but I think that will also help point us forward to where God's leading us. Now, I think for all of us, whether you've been here for a month or whether you've been here for 10 months, I think what's going to happen today is we're going to leave here I think with a real sense of gratitude for what God has done. And so what I want to do to get us started, I want to take us way back all the way to the year 1978. Now, that was before, actually, I'm looking around this room, like many of you weren't even born yet in 1978. And then there's others of you who are like, oh, that wasn't even that long ago. Well, it was. And which means you know exactly what that means, right? It means you're old. You're not me, because you know I wasn't born until the early 90s. But anyway, it means we're old, of course. But anyway, 1978. It was the year that my family moved here to Aurora, Illinois. I was 5 years old, and my dad came here to be the pastor of the church that you are in, not physically this building, but the church that you are in right now. And for many years, my dad pastored this church. He impacted a lot of people's lives, there's no question about it. He was very involved in the community. If you knew him, you know that he had a real vision, and he had a dream of helping our city become what he and many others believed this city was capable of becoming. And he devoted his life to that. Now we'll pause there and fast forward now to the year 2002. 2002, it's about 11 years ago. Is that right? 10 years ago? 11 years ago? Wow, 11 years ago. Now, of course, in 2002, the Orchard looked very different than it does today. As some of you may remember, not many of you were here in 2002, but let me show you a couple photos just to give you an idea of how things have changed in terms of appearance. Here's a quick picture of our worship space when we first moved into this building. So that is this room that we're sitting in right now. Last night, a couple of people like clapped right away when I showed that, which then was awkward. And I think like that meant they liked the old style better, which is okay. That's fine. You know, the blue chairs and everything is nice. But anyway, and here's a couple other photos. Our Orchard Kids Space. Here's one of the photos. That's where our kids are at now. Go to the next one. So we have, there's Jesus, and if you'll notice, there's children that are hanging from wires from the ceiling, which really says a lot to the new parents who are dropping their kids off. And so when I came here, one of the first things I did was I got rid of those wires and we went with Velcro. Now, things looked a lot different here in 2002, and not only did they look different, but the truth is everything about this church was different in 2002. Everything. In fact, to say that this was an entirely different church at that time is, it feels like a huge understatement. It was a different church. You know, at the time, and over a period of years, the church had found itself at a very fragile place. You know, over time, the church had lost something. It had lost some passion. It had lost vision. The church was no longer growing. It was no longer impacting the community. It was, ultimately, it was not making the kind of difference that my dad had really dreamed of this church one day making. It just wasn't happening. And while on one hand the church would say, hey, we want to reach people, we want to, whatever the phrases might be, we want to win our city for God, or we want to love our city or whatever, while verbally it would say things like that, we want to reach people, what the actions of the church were saying was something a little bit different. It was something more like, we want to reach people as long as they like our music. Right? We want to reach people as long as our service times are convenient for them. Right? We want to reach people as long as they believe exactly how we believe, and as long as they live how we live, as long as they understand our Christianese language that we've become so fluent at speaking that people can't even make sense of what they're hearing. But we want to reach people. See, it's one thing to say it. You can put that on a bumper sticker, you can put it on a t-shirt, you can put it on a big sign in the foyer. But that doesn't mean you necessarily have the actions to back it up and to actually see it happen. And that's exactly where the church had ended up. The church essentially had become more focused on those on the inside than it had been on those on the outside of the church. It had become very ingrown. And yet, even then, what was happening inside the church wasn't real healthy either. I mean, you had, you know, morale was low, momentum was coming to a halt. People, I mean, there was disunity, there was dissension, there was gossip happening. People would walk in the doors, they would, you could never predict what the, you know, it's like you're afraid to invite your friends because you never knew what was going to happen in church that weekend, you know, and it was just kind of a mess. The bottom line is things weren't good, and the truth is in 2002, this place that my dad had committed his life to and devoted his life to was dying. And it was in the midst of all of this that my dad began to really sense the Spirit saying something to him over and over again. And it was simply this: Larry, one day when you stand before me, the question is not going to be how comfortable were you or your people in their Christianity. The question is going to be, what did you do with what I gave you? That question woke my dad up. And so at almost 60 years of age, he became determined that he was going to lead the church in an entirely new direction, which meant really risking everything. I mean, it meant literally redefining not only the way that we did church, our approach to church, but it meant ultimately even redefining the entire reason this church existed to begin with. I mean, see, this wasn't going to be about let's wear jeans and use cool language now and maybe we're going to be relevant. This was about diving deep into the core and having a change of the DNA, you know, something very, very deep. Well, as many of you know, it was around that same time my dad had this really horrible idea to ask his son to come and help him at this church. And so he called me up, asked me to come and to consider helping him, you know, lead this church a new direction. And, you know, as every good son says to his father in his father's most, in the time of desperate and great need, I said, no way. I don't want to. You know, my wife and I, we have been living out of state. We've been on staff at a couple other churches, and we had just come out of, you know, in the Christian language, we would call this like character building year. It's what we call our year from hell. Okay, and it was awful year. It's the year that church work almost made me become an alcoholic. And so, you know, we're living out of state. We're burned out. We had just come through a really tough year of ministry. And the last thing we wanted to do was to come back to Aurora. In fact, there's two places we said we would never live. We swore. We said we will never live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where hell is located. And we lived there for 11 months. And I'm sorry if you're from there. God bless you. Maybe you can change it. But, and then the other place we said we'd never live was Aurora. And so, you know, now we say, you know, oh, God, we'll never live in Hawaii, ever, ever. Did you hear that, God? We will never live in Hawaii. Let's just see if this works. You guys want to go? Okay. So anyway, so I say no to my dad. Well, thankfully, my dad, he didn't accept that answer. And then he pulled out the old, well, no, have you really prayed about it? And which was, you know, I consider to be extremely manipulative and really upset me that he would ask me to pray about it, because then that's just a whole other deal then. So anyway, we did pray, and after a lot of wrestling and deal-making with God and negotiating and all this other stuff, we finally decided that we would come here to Aurora for 1 year. 1 year. Well, little did we know coming in just how difficult things were about to get. So in March of 2002, we began changing things. And when I say changing things, I mean we dove deep into change. And not only did we dive deep, but we dove fast. Someone once said it was like we performed open heart surgery on our church without using any anesthesia. We cracked it open, and we said, all right, We're not totally sure what we want to be, but we certainly know what we don't want to be. And so let's identify whatever we're doing that's causing us to be what we don't want to be, and let's stop it. And of course, we all know how much people love and adore change. No, people are confused. They don't love change. People love the idea of change, right? None of us like change. People like change as long as that change makes perfect sense to them. But because change means going places you've never gone before, it never makes full sense. We resist it, right? People like change as long as they don't have to change, right? As long as it involves my husband changing, I'm open to change. As long as it involves just my wife changing, but if I have to change, time out. And so anyway, we literally begin changing everything. And what began to happen is that the majority of people who were still left in our church at that time didn't like it, and so they began leaving, which of course also meant that their giving began leaving and their financial support began leaving. And soon, things got worse and worse and worse and things ended up actually being worse after we started changing things than before. And they were pretty bad before, but now they were even worse. And so now all the people who didn't like the change were saying, see, they were like the Israelites begging to go back. Egypt wasn't that bad, right? And so, you know, it was getting pretty rough. Bills weren't getting paid. We could barely pay our mortgage on this place. Payroll wasn't being met. My dad, it's probably a good year and a half, 2 years. He didn't take 1 cent. Several months, almost a year for me, not taking anything. And then on top of that, my dad took everything he had out of his savings, out of his retirement. He took a second mortgage out on his home and put all of it back into the church so that we could survive those rough years. Those were tough times. Some of the most challenging times of our lives, and especially my dad. And at times it got so bad, there were actually a handful of occasions that we were sitting down and we were looking at the weekend ahead, knowing that we had church services coming up, and our conversation was that it seemed like that coming weekend could potentially be our last weekend ever gathering together as a church. And yet the crazy thing is that no matter how hard it got for us, in the midst of all of that, there was this dream. A dream that basically went like this. What if? What if? What if we can make it through this time? And it was a dream that was based on this idea that, you know, the last thing that our city and our community needs is just another church. And what we begin to really believe was that what our community needs more than anything is a place where people can come regardless of where they're at in their spiritual journey, regardless of whether or not they look like us, believe like us, live like us, or whatever the situation is. Our community, our city needs a place where people could come, and regardless of any of those things, can walk in and know that they will be loved and accepted, period. And that drove us. And that gave us the fuel, that gave us the energy to keep pushing through those really, really difficult times. Well, finally, around 2004, something began happening. People started coming to church. And not just any people. All of a sudden, what we started seeing were unchurched people walking through our doors. And when I say unchurched, I'm talking about people who were either have never been a part of a church in their lives, because we weren't interested in growing by disgruntled migration. You know, people leaving one church disgruntled, so they come over here, and then they're going to get disgruntled here at some point, probably. And so let's just grow with a bunch of disgruntled people. Like, that's not the only reason people leave churches, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, but this was like unchurched people. Either people who had never been a part of a church before, or people who hadn't been in church for several years were showing up. And here's the thing. It's like we had just been through, people were criticized. criticizing us, pointing fingers at us. I mean, people were telling us that we're going to hell, that we're failing, that we kicked the Holy Spirit out of our church and sent the Holy Spirit somewhere. I'm not sure where they thought the Spirit went, but in the midst of it, something started happening. People started showing up, and don't get me wrong, that was the plan, but it's just that when it actually started happening, we couldn't believe it. We were like, there's people showing up. It's actually working. I mean, people are showing up and not scratching their heads and leaving and never coming back. Like, people actually coming in and they're getting involved, they're getting baptized, they're serving. I mean, something is actually happening. And it felt like we had turned, like, the biggest corner in the universe. And it was literally right as we turned that corner that something completely unexpected happened. Many of you know, in October of 2004, right as we turned this corner, my dad suffered a massive heart attack that took his life at the age of 60 years old. Gone. Just like that. So about 3 months or 4 months later, I was asked to do what I swore I would never do. It was never the plan. My dad never... We never talked about succession. It was never the plan for me to become the pastor of this church. My plan was to help it, get it back to life the best I could, and then leave. And so I was asked to come and be the next pastor of this church, and then that sent me back into the wrestling match with God. And that's where, again, the negotiations began with God and the deals and the prayers and begging God to call someone else to do it because I didn't want to. And yet, after all of that, and after finally just submitting to God's will, we said, yes, we'll do it. We're in. Those were some crazy years. I mean, I got to say, you know, so those years are what I would call, from 2002 to 2005, those are what I would call the ICU years, intensive care unit years, okay? So, like, the defibs were not far away ever. It's like this place may not be here tomorrow, and it doesn't matter if we're the last one standing here. We'll stay until it's all over. Those years were about survival. And yet at the same time, those were also some of the best years of my life. You know how that is? Sometimes, you know, you go through years that are really tough, but then you look back and you go, man, those were some of the best years. I know, for me, the opportunity to work with my dad the last 2 years of his life, we had something really good. Man, he was my best friend. He was my mentor. He was my boss, and we still loved each other. We didn't always see eye to eye. We didn't always agree on it. In fact, a lot of times we didn't. That's why he brought me here, to challenge him. And he challenged me. It was a beautiful thing. So the fact that I got to work with him closely, and then the other thing was to see those who hung in there with us. You know, I look around. I only see maybe five. There's more than that, but I mean, a handful of people who hung in there with us and stayed apart. And then the other thing too, looking back, what I realized was that when you have nothing, when you have no money, when you have no resources, but you still have to get things done, what happens is you start to learn some things about innovation and creativity. And so we started learning. We learned, because we had to. We learned how to do something with nothing. You know what I mean? We learned how to get very, very creative. And so as hard as those years were, you know, I look back, and I'm thankful for those years, and I would never trade them for anything. 2002, 2005, the ICU years. Well, little did we know that things were about to get even crazier. 2005 came along, and the opposite began to happen. From what had just happened during those other years, things started exploding here. I mean, suddenly people were showing up like mad, all over the place. Our attendance started going like this. I mean, just to give you an idea of how quickly things turned around, all right, literally within months of my dad's passing, we went from barely surviving. I mean, I'm talking... Talk about creative accounting. I mean, like, creative bill paying. You know what I mean? It was like bill collectors, and I mean, it was tough. And we literally went, within a matter of months, from barely surviving to getting entirely caught up financially, paying any of our staff the full amount that any of them missed during that time, and literally outside of our mortgage payment, we got caught up on all of our bills, and outside of our mortgage, we were completely debt-free in a matter of months. Now, you know, on the surface, that sounds really good. You would want that, right? But here's the problem is when that happens and your dad just died and he worked so hard for that all his life and now he doesn't even get to experience it, there's things you start to feel. You start to feel guilty. You start to feel like, man, what's the deal? This is unfair. And so there was that I was working through during that time. And then finally realizing, well, no, this is good. This is what should happen. But it was still hard. And the growth, man, the growth just kept happening. It was like every year, the attendance, 25% every year. I mean, we watched the church go from 200 people to 350 people to 400 people to 700 people to 900 people to 1,200 people. It was just year after year, this place was blowing up. I mean, there were times we were running out of chairs, okay? And you know, in fact, I told our Saturday night group last night, I said, look, you guys might think we started this Saturday night for your convenience. Well, you can think that if you want to, but we started this because we had to kick people out of Sunday because we didn't have enough chairs for everyone. And so we asked a bunch of people to leave Sunday morning and go Saturday night. And so there's all this happening. It's happening really fast. And then right alongside this, the other thing that began to happen was that the story of the orchard began getting out to pastors and church leaders all around the country and even around the world. So I was asked to write this article about transition and change. And so I shared our story. It wasn't anything fancy. I just shared the story. And all of a sudden, that story ended up, I mean, to this day, literally hundreds of thousands of pastors around the world have been inspired by what's happened here. People were hearing about a church that sounded an awfully lot like theirs, a church that was dying, a church that wasn't reaching the community it was in. It had lost their focus, but now it had been revived, and people were hearing about this. And suddenly, phone calls, I mean, multiple a day even, pastors, church leaders calling, asking me to consult with them, to help them, to reach out to them. And of course, you know, I grew up in a pastor's home, so I love pastors, you know? And so, like, my heart was to try to help as many of them as I could, and you know, I'm grieving, but I'm trying to help these pastors, and then I'm getting asked to come, and like, would you come and share with our leadership team and with our staff, and would you help us, and all this stuff. And then in the middle of all of it, in 2007, the Orchard was actually named one of the top 25 most innovative churches in America. And so things were getting crazy, man. Like suddenly, like the Orchard was thrown even more into this national spotlight. So now, not only do you have all these transition churches that are reaching out, now you've got all these other churches who think that whatever these top 25 churches got it all figured out. So now they're gravitating towards it. And so it literally becomes just overwhelming. The weight of this thing was so heavy. And so when I kind of categorized those 2005 to 2009 years, what would be what I call like the crazy growth years. I mean, maybe it should just be called insanity, okay? Because that's what it felt like. Growth happening at every level. And yet, here's the thing that a lot of people didn't know. In the midst of all of this, in the midst of what about 99% of the pastors in this world dream of seeing happen and spend years and years of their lives working to make happen, was happening here in a very short amount of time. And yet what was really happening was the more it was growing, the more it was increasing, the more miserable and the more I wanted to quit, the more miserable I was becoming. And at first, I didn't know why. I thought there was something wrong with me. I wondered if I was even really called to be a pastor, you know, because here, like, the greatest things are happening, and yet I'm miserable. You know, I wanted to run, I wanted to hide, and it was difficult, you know? And because there really were great things happening. I mean, there were people, there were stories of great things. But you know what I began to realize? As I really started slowing down, as I really started getting quiet, what I really began to understand was that there was, at the end of the day, filling seats, you know, drawing a lot of people, growing a big church, you know, getting noticed, all of that. You know what I began to realize was that none of that was doing anything for me. Nothing. Except making me burn out and making me want to quit. And then I also began to feel like that all this work that we had done and all that was sacrificed, especially my dad, man, the friendships that were sacrificed, you know, because people leave churches in the most crappy ways. And so people would leave just angry and, you know, people whose children he dedicated and people that he officiated their weddings and buried some of their family members and things like that. You know, it's like people just leave bad oftentimes, and that hurt him. And so looking back at all of that he was sacrificed and all that he had to work through during that time, at the end of the day, here's what I knew. I knew that all of that that happened had to be about something much more than just filling seats and growing a church and having a nice story to tell. I knew it had to be about something more than that. Well, around that same time, you know, so here I am, I'm in my early 30s. You know, I've got a young family. I've got two kids at that time, three now. And then, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to lead a growing church. And on top of that, I'm also traveling. I'm speaking. I'm turning down because I can't even keep up with it all. I'm going to these conferences. And the truth is, like, I didn't even like that. Like, it was draining and stressful and everything else. And anyway, the weight of it all just was coming down on me. And it was a really, really tough season. You know, it's funny because I was sharing in one of the services, one of the things that pastors feel sort of this, that there's this expectation that people have of them. And I should say pastors, I'll just say this is how I feel. I feel it every day. That there's, on one hand, there's this expectation that I'm going to be the greatest leader in the world. That I'm going to be an amazing leader, risk taker, CEO who's going to make sound leadership decisions every day. I'm going to lead boldly. I'm going to build the greatest team possible. While also at the same time being the most loving, compassionate, kind-hearted, grace-filled, mercy-motivated pastor and shepherd of God's people who is going to also preach the most nutritionally rich, organic, non-GMO, theologically pure sermons that everyone will always love and agree with, including their grandma. Can I tell you, sometimes trying to figure all that out really sucks. It's hard. Trying to wear those hats and wear those well and to make decisions, it's harder, man. It is more difficult than anyone can imagine until you're doing it. And I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just telling you this is how I have felt. Because at times, you know, it's funny because one of the things we expect good leaders to do is make tough decisions. Right? And so at times, here's what I've learned, is at times being a good leader means that you are faced with making decisions that are difficult to make and decisions that not everybody is even going to understand. But if any of you have ever led anything, if you've ever led anything more than a piece of paper, you'll know that some of the, usually the most right thing to do is almost always the hardest thing to do. Right? The easy thing is to leave everything alone and just let it be. The harder thing is to make the tough decisions, knowing full well that not everyone's going to love it and not everyone's going to understand it. Well, thankfully, somehow I made it through that time without getting admitted to an institution of some sort. But what began to happen is I began to learn how to get quiet, which you got to understand, for me, that's kind of a big deal. I know that's hard to imagine. But I begin to learn about contemplative practices. I begin learning about things like prayer and meditation. I begin to learn about spiritual practices that cause me to slow down and to get quiet and to practice silence and solitude. And what I begin realizing in the midst of all of that was that the only thing I really wanted to do, the only thing I really wanted to devote my life to was one thing, very simple, and that was to help people become everything God had created them to be, period. That's it. To help people become who God has created them to be. That's all I wanted to do. To see people's lives transformed. If in 10 years all this was a church full of people who could quote a lot of Bible scripture, Bible passages, but their lives were never changed, well, that idea made me want to vomit. You know, I mean, if all this was ever going to be was we help people gain a lot of Bible knowledge or learn how to pray really well, King James, thee, thou prayers, and so that they can impress everyone around them, but they're still not loving their wife or their husband, and they're still treating their children like crap, and they got all these emotional issues that are coming out sideways and hurting everyone around them. Forget it. I didn't want to do that. What I wanted to see was, and what I wanted to be a part of, was a community filled with people who understand that church is not something that you go to on Saturday or Sunday, but church is something you are on Monday and on Tuesday and on Wednesday. It's who you are. And while transformation is important, even that is not an end into itself. I mean, do you realize, I mean, if you think you're being transformed, but you're actually becoming more and more judgmental, or if you think you're being transformed, but you're becoming more arrogant in your faith, or you think you start getting God all figured out. Well, let me tell you something. There's a good chance that you're mistaking what's happening for transformation, and it's really not. Because do you know something? True transformation will always eventually send you outside of yourself. True transformation eventually will always cause you become focused on others outside of yourself. It just will, or it's not transformation. That's what God does in our lives. It's not just so we can feel better and pat ourselves on the back and say, well, now I'm transformed, aren't you glad? No. It is always God blesses you so that you can be a blessing to others. It's all over the Bible, friends. And so my dream was to be a part of something like that, to be a part of a thing where, you know, people who are transformed can then come together and be a part of an even larger transformation, a transformation that could start in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our city. You know, a community of people who are driven by this idea that okay, it's one thing to be a church in the city, but it's a whole other thing to actually be a church that is a part of helping to make the city what it is. And yet here I was, the ironic thing is I'm starting to realize all this. The thing that I start to also realize is that it seemed like the one thing I really wanted to be a part of was the thing I was least able to do. I feel like I was doing a great job of growing the church, but I wasn't doing a great job of leading us into transformation and especially into transformation of our community. And you know what I began to realize was the one thing that was holding us back, the one thing that was holding me back from leading us into being that kind of church, was the fact that the city that God had called me to was a city that, to be perfectly honest with you, at that time was a city that I wanted nothing to do with. It was Aurora. I didn't want to be here. I grew up here. I had a lot of baggage, a lot of, perceptions, a lot of things I needed to work through. I didn't want to be here. My wife and I, our dream was not to come and plant or start a church in Aurora. Our dream was to move. In fact, our plan was to help this church for a little bit, and then we were going to leave, and our next step was to move to New York City, and we were going to plant a church, a brand new church, a new kind of church in Manhattan. But instead, God had another idea, and I didn't really like it. I mean, never in a million years did I imagine that God would call me to be here. And so I had a lot I had to work through. I didn't know what to do. I felt stuck because it was like, it was one of those places I was at where I said, okay, I don't just want to grow a church. I want to be part of something transformative, but I can't seem to do that either. So you know what I did? I finally prayed and I begged God to let me leave. And actually, my prayer was this. I made one small mistake in this prayer. I prayed this. I said, God, either let me leave and go somewhere else, or, and this is where the mistake happened, change my heart. Because, see, what I believed was that our city deserved a church that was really going to embrace it and love it. But I knew that in order for that to happen, the church would need to have a pastor who also could lead them into loving and embracing the city. And as far as I was concerned, I was not the person to do that. And so that became my prayer, either let me leave or change my heart. And can I tell you that as crazy as it sounds, not long after praying that prayer, something started happening in me. My heart began to change. And I started spending more time in our city. I had a friend who had an office that was empty, and so he said, anytime you want to go use that. So 2 or 3 days a week, I would go down to go downtown Aurora. And I started walking our city. And I started listening to our city. And I started seeing the city from a different perspective. And all of a sudden, I found myself starting to get, like, defensive when people would say bad things about Aurora. And I stopped, like, lying all the time about where I was from. Instead of, like, I'm from Chicago. Like, I felt guilty about it. And so I started saying, no, I'm from Aurora. And the people would maybe say comments, and I would be like, no, you can't say that. And I started saying things like, my city. Whoa. My eyes, they begin changing, and I begin to see things I'd never seen before. And instead of being ashamed of our city, I started having like this compassion that started rising up within me. And eventually I found that I had this love for our city that I didn't even know I was capable of having. It's like when you've had like one or two kids, and then you find out that you're going to have another one, and you're trying to be excited about it, but you're like, holy crap. And you're thinking, there's no room. I have no more love to give. And then you have that baby, and you're like, oh, my God, I love you. And then they turn two, and you're like, I don't love you anymore. The hell's going on here, you know? And so, you know, I mean, that that's what was happening in me. It was like something was being birthed, and this love for our city was forming. And some of you might remember, I was trying to talk about it with the church, and I'd stand up here. All I could do was weep. It was a mess. It turns out, God was changing me. I mean, God was breaking my heart. People around me who knew me, they couldn't believe it. They said, wow, I swear to you, if I had friends who were atheists, they would have said, oh, there must be a God because Hodge is actually changing here, you know? I mean, this was legitimate. So that brings us to the last couple of years here at this place and in my life. I came into 2010 with this really, well, I guess you could say with a deepening commitment to our city and to our community. And not only did I start having this deepening commitment to our city, but the other thing I began to realize was I began to get a better understanding of what it was going to take to actually lead our church into doing this, into actually being a church that's not just in our city, but a church that's actually for and with our city. And I began to get a picture of what that ought to look like, and here's what it became really evident to me. And this is really important. I want you to get this part. Here's what I started to get understanding of, was that what got us to that point up to 2010 was not going to be enough to get us where we needed to go into the future. Okay, what got us here was not going to get us there, all right? There were some big changes that were going to have to happen again. And specifically, changes in me. Changes in how I was leading our church, okay? So what I'm talking about is I had to make some serious shifts in the way in my commitment, in my focus, in my willingness to dive deep into our church. It would mean saying no to a lot of things. It would mean a lot. What I began realizing is I had been running so stinking fast. I mean, here I was, my dad dies instantly. My best friend, my mentor, my boss, he's gone. I'm grieving that. I'm dealing with depression through that. I mean, it was an awful thing. And then the church is exploding and all this stuff happening. And in the midst of all of this, I had never really taken the time to truly engage and build a strong and sustainable team and structure that would lead us into really being able to impact our community. That was the realization. And so while things looked really good on the surface, things looked very successful on the surface, the truth was our skeletal structure was weak. And so I began to see the work that was in front of me, and at this point I started to really ask the question, do I even want to do this anymore? Because I'm tired, man. And then I realized that question was just actually covering up another question that was really the issue in me, which is really the question of, can I do this? Do I have what it takes? Have you ever asked yourself that question? You start to get a picture of what's needed, and you start to ask, man, I don't know if I can do this. There were a good 3 months for me that I was pretty convinced that I had led this church as far as I could take it. I remember sitting down with Larry, sitting down with Ted, a few of my friends, and a few of my mentors, and wrestling through this with them. And can I tell you, it's so important to have good people around you. Man, he who walks with wise people will be wise. And I got to say, thankfully, through the counsel, through the voices of a few friends and mentors, and as I begin to take time away, change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective, right? Well, that change of perspective began happening, and I began to hear the reassuring voice of the Spirit in my life. And what I began to really see was, you know what? With the right people, with the right team, with the right people, you in who's sitting here in this room today, with the right people, not only can this be done, but there is just way too much at stake, and it must be done. But what I knew was that if it was going to happen, it was going to cost us something. You look around this room. Remember I was telling you we were running out of chairs? Look around. Are there some open chairs in this room? Yep. Like I said, it was going to cost us something. Here's what I mean. What I needed to do was rebuild this place. I had to rebuild it. For years, the church had grown from the outside in. What I needed to do was rebuild it from the inside out. Do you understand that? Things were weak internally, so I had to build from the inside out. Well, here's what I knew. I knew that I only had so much energy to give this thing. And so I remember the day that I sat down with my wife, and we were talking about it, and I said, okay, here's the deal. I can't do everything, so I have to pick and choose right now for the next 2 years where my focus is going to go. And so what I realized was that for me to continue to expend my energy in creating new and flashy and all the creative stuff and even a lot of that I felt like needed to shift. We were getting stuck and all of these kind of things. And I knew that there was no way that I could put a ton of energy in standing up here and casting new vision that would be built on a faulty structure. And so what I knew was, I have to make a decision that I have to let go of for a season. And we got to go in maintenance mode so that I can take my energy and put it down internally and shift my focus where it needed to go. But what I knew was then, okay, well, what's going to happen then? And I was very aware of this. I said, well, our growth is probably going to plateau. All right, because I'm not going to be up casting a ton of vision for probably 18 months or so, maybe longer. I knew that the growth would probably not just plateau, but slow down. Or actually, what I knew is probably some people would leave because of that, because they'd feel like, well, what's going on here? Momentum would feel different. And I also knew I just knew things were going to change. But I decided that as tough as it would be, I had no other choice. Because here's the thing, what I knew was going back to how things were was not only not sustainable and not healthy, eventually what would happen is I would burn out and crash, and it would probably mess my marriage up, probably mess my family up, my kids would probably grow up hating church, and most of the church members would think I'm a complete jerk. So I made the decision. I pulled our staff together. I said, listen, these next 18 months, my focus is going internal. We'll still do our services, we'll do our best, but my main focus is going to be building from the inside out. And so I came into 2011. Let me tell you, when 2011 showed up, January, so did Scott Hodge. I'm telling you, I was committed, I was focused, I was ready to dive deep and to lead at a level I'd never led before. So here was what my plan was coming into 2011. I want to share this. This is important. I know we're going a little bit over, but it's all right. The Bears don't play till like 7, so 7:30. Here's what I begin to realize. So Jim Collins has this great book called Good to Great. And his analogy is fantastic, because he has this analogy where he says, okay, the most important thing you do is you got to make sure, number one, that you have the right people on the bus. And then secondly, you got to make sure, so that was the first thing. I had to make sure I had the right people, the right team around me. all right? Thankfully, I have the freedom as the pastor here to hire the team I need. All right, I don't have to go through 15 channels and end up with a team that I don't like, that don't like me, and that, because that, of course, creates chaos, right? Some of you actually work on one of those teams, and you hate it, okay? I get that. But so here's the deal. I knew I had to get the right people on the bus, and then I had to get the right people in the right seats on the bus, which is a whole nother challenge. And so I had to get the right people on the bus, had to get the right people in the right seats on the bus, and then once that's figured out, then we'll figure out where we're going. Then we'll figure out the strategy, the vision, all that kind of stuff. And so what I did was in January of that year, I rewrote all the job descriptions for entire staff. I created and implemented a brand new and extremely rigorous hiring process because I was really serious about this. I by February and March, I recruited and hired a couple of key staff leaders, worked really hard during the summer months, and in the fall of that year, I formed what I have called our lead team, which is a small group of executive-level directors or leaders that I would personally coach and work closely with, and it would represent and lead all the areas of the church. It was a lot of work. I'm telling you, man, but I was so energized by it. And I probably had the greatest burst of leadership clarity I've ever had in my life. But it was like starting over, except it was like starting over with about 1,000 people along for the ride. And so that year, 2011, became about team building. So I literally stopped the majority of my traveling, speaking, writing. I was writing a book, completely put that on hold. I said, I can't do that either. I dove neck deep in developing this team that God has ended up bringing here and putting together at the Orchard. Which brings us to last year, 2012. So our team walked into 2012, having spent a ton of time praying and seeking God and asking some really, really good questions, and then taking a step back and shutting our mouths and just listening. We went away on retreats and we listened and we prayed. We put our ear to the ground and we said, what is the Spirit saying to us in this season? And as we did that, we began to look far beyond just at our staff, far beyond just me as the lead pastor. We began to look at the people that God has brought here. We began to look at all of us collectively, the people. You know why? Because ultimately, that's what the church is. Right? I mean, that's why, better than seeing the church as an organization is to see it as an organism. Right? Because it's made up of people. People are alive, right? And anytime you have life, anytime you have an organism, there's going to be, just like anything else, there's going to be feeling and emotion and spirit and disposition and character. Right? Just like a person, has an essence about them. You know what I mean? And when if you've ever been around someone who's passed away, when they're gone, they are gone. That essence is gone. Man, life is, you know, when life is no longer there, right? Organizations, churches, they have the same thing. They have an essence. They have an ethos. You remember that word? Here's ethos. Here's what it means. The fundamental character or spirit of a culture, the underlying sentiment that informs the beliefs, customs, and practices of a group or society, the distinguishing character or disposition of a community. So in some ways, you could say it's like our tribal emotion, our collective soul. And so what we did as a lead team is we took a step back and we said, okay, who are we? And for about 18 months, we met with leaders in our church, we met with each other, we discovered, we reflected, and if you remember, about a year ago, I stood up, and I shared with you 6 core values that have become the driving force behind everything that we do from here on out as a church community. Now, if you were here last weekend, you might have seen, I'm not sure if Julie was here Sunday morning, but she did a beautiful job. This door up here on the stage that she painted, she's put all of our values on there. Isn't that beautiful? And so she wrote on there, and she painted and wrote, sounds so lame, wrote. Great artist who wrote. She illustrated our values, and I want to show you what these are real quick. The first one up there is goodness and beauty. So essentially, and I'm just going to say one quick thing about these. Goodness and beauty. One of the things we believe is that even in the midst of our broken world, our world that is a mess, right? And so are we. We look in the mirror, we see a little bit of a mess, right? Even in the midst of it all, we believe that God is still blessing and affirming the beauty of his creation. And so as a church, we believe that we're called to be people who are seeking out and affirming what's good and beautiful in this world. We believe that not only are we called to seek out and affirm what is good and what is beautiful, but we believe that we're called to create goodness and beauty. Another one is grace. Aren't you thankful for grace? You know what's so great about grace? Grace is what, it enables our identity to be far greater than any of our mistakes or failures or any of the labels that anyone tries to put on us. And it's because of grace that we can show up in community and not have to wear a lame facade or try to wear a mask and pretend that we're something that we're really not. We can embrace authenticity. Another one is renewal. Renewal really speaks to God's response to the brokenness of our world. And so when we see brokenness, we're not going to run away from it and protest it and condemn it. Instead, we're going to become proactive and we're going to find ways to stand up for what we believe is right. We're going to be a church that's more known for the things we're for than the things that we're against. Another one is the value of story, which is why we take time like today, because we believe we have a great story to tell. And that story is still being formed. Another one is generosity. Man, generosity is a value. That's a beautiful thing because generosity frees you. It frees you because what you realize is that everything you have in your life belongs to God. It comes from God and it belongs to God, so it's not yours. And so what happens is it enables you to hold on to it very lightly. And then the last one is the value of wholeness. I mean, ultimately, what are we helping people to become here? Well, the answer to that is found by looking at Jesus. I mean, you look at Jesus and what you have is a perfect picture of what it looks like to live a life that is aligned and that is lived out to its fullest. And so that's why here at The Orchard, we believe that it's not just important to focus on the spiritual part of our lives. We believe that every part of our lives are important. Our mental part of our life is important. Our emotional. See, look, you will only be able to go so far in your journey with God until you have to start paying attention to some of the other areas of your life. It's all connected. And so the best thing we can be about as a church is helping people grow and develop and to take one step at a time towards living out their full potential as a whole, connected, integrated human being. And so we came out of last year with some real clarity on our values, and then we came into this year, 2013, with some real clarity of answering the question, what do these values look like lived out in our community? And so we've come up with three key areas of focus this year. We're going to be about three things, and that's what we're going to talk about these next couple weeks. One of those has to do with the way in which we help people connect with one another in community. Another one of those has to do with how we help people grow towards that vision of wholeness in their lives. And so one of the big initiatives we're about immediately this year is about has to do with what we're calling connection and growth. We're going to talk more about that next weekend. But look, let me just be really honest, because I'm not afraid to admit this. We're very aware. For a long time now, we've had some real gaps in these two areas. We've realized that the Orchard is not necessarily an easy place to connect with other people. So if you're new here, you've probably experienced that. It's going to get better. We realize that growth, everybody grows differently. And so we can't start a gazillion programs, but we can start to come up with some creative ways and environments that will help you grow in a way that you best grow and develop. We'll be talking more about that next week, and we're about to make some big investments and take some serious risks of faith that we really shouldn't even be thinking about taking right now financially, but we believe we have to. Another big area of focus has to do with our recognition that the Orchard is filled with some crazy, amazing people with some incredible skills and abilities and talents and passions. There are. Let me just put it this way. God has not called just me or our lead team to lead this church. We believe that God has called all of us to be a part of helping this church move forward. And so we're going to share more about that later, but there's some ways that we're going to be asking you to really partner with us and to really be a part of what's happening here. There are a lot of seats on the bus that are empty right now. We need to fill those seats, and we have our eyes on a bunch of you. And I know some of you are thinking, yeah, but I'm not a leader. Well, just give us a little bit of time to convince you otherwise. So another big focus of ours this year is leadership. And then the last one is what we just talked about a minute ago. It's our values. And we want to see our values be a lot more than just words on a screen. What we want to see is those values become something that each of us embrace in our lives in a different, unique way. And I'll tell you what, as we embrace these values, let me tell you, what begins to happen is one beautiful word. The word is unity. God unifies us and something beautiful happens. I mean, really, the love of God transcends everything, doesn't it? The love of God. But then for us as a local community, we said, what's going to unite us? Is it going to be doctrine? Is it going to be the color of carpet? Is it going to be all the programs? Is it going to be the style of music? No. Listen, there's room for a little bit of different beliefs on some things. It's okay. We realize everybody's at a different place. Everybody's different opinions of what this passage means and that. It's okay. Sure, there's some key things that we want to hold on to. But outside of that, there's some room. It's okay. And to unite around programs or style of music, all that's subject to change. So we said, you know what? Let's make it about our values. Let's unite around our values. And so as you see these values, if you're sitting here going, well, those completely suck. I don't think I like those. Well, that's a pretty good sign to you that this probably is not the church for you. That's okay. But if there's something in you that makes your heart pound a little bit faster, and you look at these, you go, man, I'm not even sure what they're all about, but they excite me. Well, hang in with us because there's some cool things, directions we're headed. And I'll tell you what, listen, when we unite, get ready because something powerful happens. You know what happens? It's exactly what we read in Acts. And I want to go back to it before we leave. Beautiful description of what happens when a bunch of people get united in their hearts and minds. Here's what it says. Acts 2:44. You heard it earlier. I want you to hear it again. All the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. Verse 46, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. Now imagine that, being a church that the community around us looks at and says, man, there's something really great about that place. I don't even agree with it. I'm not even sure I believe it, but man, that place is awesome. You know, most churches, if they stopped existing, wouldn't even be noticed that they're gone. Imagine this being a place where if we stopped existing or we announced one day that we're closing shop, people would be lined up out here with picket signs saying, please don't leave us. Our community, our city needs you. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And then in verse 32, if you back up in Acts chapter 4 a little bit, I love where it says in verse 32. In fact, I want us to read it together. Will you read with me? Ready? All the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own, so they shared everything they had. Now listen, we're talking 2,000 years ago this was happening, and since that time, the church has been through a lot of crap. I'm telling you, over centuries, the church has been through persecution, has been through war, has been through internal dissension and cultural resistance. The church has had money problems, sexual problems, vision problems, segregation problems, people problems, on down the list. And yet, nothing has been able to keep God from using his people in ways that have literally transformed homes and neighborhoods and communities and cities and villages and beyond in both amazing and beautiful ways. And so for us, that's our hope. That's our prayer. That God would make this place a movement. A movement that some may look at and say, you know what, that's a place where people are united in heart and mind. Would you bow your heads with me? Let's close in prayer. God, I think the picture that we see in Acts, obviously the way that's played out today in the year 2013 looks probably much different. But at the core of it is this picture of what it looks like when the church is doing what it ought to be doing. I pray that you would make us a community of people that literally ooze goodness and beauty, and grace and renewal. God, would you make us the kind of church that really figures out ways to be a huge blessing to the community that you've placed us in? God, more than numbers, more than filling chairs, would you just bring the right people here? God, thank you for working in our hearts and for all that you've done. We look back over the years and it just blows our minds at how faithful and how good you have been to us. We ask that your work would continue in our hearts individually and in our heart as a community. We pray that, and we ask that now. In the name of your Son, Jesus. And everyone said, amen.